Hey, Chris Manning from Lockdown Caps here. It's book club. It's Friday. So coming up in today's show, we're going to talk about We'll Be Free, talk about the 86 Cavs draft, and talk about the late, great John Hot Rod Williams. That's all coming up today on Lockdown Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the cube.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, now that you've arrived, I'm rolling out the red carpet for you.
Thank you. Did you punch your microphone when we were syncing up? I just really want to know real quick.
I hit the table.
Oh, it sounded like you cocked your fist back. I'm like, okay, I didn't know it was hosting.
No, I don't have the energy for that in my old age.
Chris, you just turned 27. Come on now. Yeah, no, rolling out the red carpet. I am flattered for, but my name isn't as cool as World Be Free. Like, legally, that's just a cool name. There's nowhere else to say it. Like, and maybe his jersey should be retired on namesake alone.
You have some takes here. Why don't you start us off? What is your World Be Free take after this chapter?
Terry, I don't know if you're listening, but I think it's really fucking weird that you just basically worship and slob on the knob of World Be Free for the better part of this chapter. Like, I get it, you guys were buddies, but maybe this is me being a jaded and kind of just cynical asshole in the fact that the Cavs won't return my calls and just kind of treat me like a clingy ex at this point. But I cannot wrap my head around the fact that, like, a journalist is, like, best buddies with a meaningful player in Cavs history. And I'm more so surprised that World Be Free is only 6'2". He seems like a much larger man in all the pictures of him and in this book. That's just me making an aside. That's just my take. But I have some takes after that. But let's talk about World Be Free. Not the man or the friend, but the player. He was really good for the Cavs.
I'm almost just a very entertaining player. Love that he was, like, bald. Just, like, kind of has, like, the I think it's George Jefferson, like, Daniel Cormier kind of, like, bald kind of thing.
He was born Lloyd Bernard Free, but World Be Free is cooler anyways.
Much better. Comes from, like, a crazy little, like, has a crazy origin story that I don't know how replicable it is. Comes out of nowhere, really plays, has, like, that rep of being, like, a big scorer on bad teams for really his whole career. The Cavs are really his, like, last hurrah.
Definitely, because he averaged 5.8 points for Philly after he left Cleveland and 6.4 points for Houston, largely off the bench for both teams, so his last hurrah was here.
Yeah, it's look, thinking about this, like, so much of scouting is, like, word of mouth, and that just seems, like, insane, considering how we know how, like, detailed scouting gets now for even high school guys. Mm-hmm. That in itself is just, like, a crazy little thing to think about in retrospect, like, and that he just kind of slipped through the fact, like, World Be Free is just playground New York made, becomes this guy, plays at small colleges, kind of keeps rising up and rising up and rising up, ultimately gets to the NBA and has, like, a pretty memorable career just because of his thing, and you know, just isn't ever a guy that seemingly was, like, comfortable with the fame and the money side of it, like,
for the, you know, love of the game.
It's like love of the game and just kind of being himself, and there's something really admirable about that. He seems like a guy that would have been, like, really popular in, like, a social media era, just think because, like, of the way he plays and stuff like that.
Well, he'd be popular in the social media era just in general because legally changing his name to World on his 28th birthday, so he's still cool. But, I mean, to quote him, according to him, he said, "The fellows back in Brownsville gave me the nickname World when I was in junior high. They just started calling me All World because All City and All County and things like that weren't good enough. Finally, they just started calling me World. I'm still the same guy when I was Lloyd, though. I'll say what I'm going to do, and then I'll go out and do it." Like, that's very Ocho Cinco-esque of him to say that. Like, very humble, but still at the same time, it's not like he hate me kind of thing, but it's still a cool name change, and I'm still really hung up on that. But Yeah, just a guy who kind of really definitely slipped through the cracks playing, like, New York playground basketball and just building his repertoire and his game up there. And he went to Guilford and was the helped lead the team to the NAIA National Championship. It was named MVP of the tournament as well, as a freshman, nonetheless. And that's impressive within itself as well. And it's just a fascinating player that stuck with Cleveland. And I'd make a Steph Curry joke about love of the game kind of thing. And actually, I'm going to. Like, he was Steph-esque Mr. Be Free. Just in fact that he was just a very talented scorer and just a kind of a fun player overall. And I feel like he would be showboaty too if, like, we were watching him face-to-face today. I don't know. I just get that vibe. At 66 years old, he has a lot of swagger still.
Yeah, also just kind of interesting that he comes in at a time when the Cavs are really bad. Like, it's kind of like the solace of this really bleak Cavs era that we talked about last week with Eric Musselman and every all the bad stuff kind of going on with
Ted
the Cavs.
Steppy and just burning everything in sight.
Yes. Also, here's a great quote. "People would take me to a fancy restaurant and I'd order a cheeseburger and a Budweiser. I remember being a rookie and going out to a place to get served oysters and lobster. What did I know about oysters and lobsters? How was I supposed to eat that? I asked the waiter to bring me some ketchup. The waiter looked at me and said, 'Sir, what did you say?' I told him to forget it. That was one of the most embarrassing moments when I felt like I didn't belong with people with money. I felt so low, I could have walked out of the room without bothering to open the door." This is just like a really kind of salt of the earth guy, and despite kind of some of his reputation. And I think, again, like, he's just such an interesting guy amid a really bad Cavs period, amid a lot of just not great stuff within these Cavs chapter. And, you know, I do think there's some of it that you do have to experience it. I'm pro that argument that Terry and Joe Tate are really pushing in this chapter. But I think they, at the very least, even if it's a little over the top, I do like kind of the stuff they're hitting at there.
No, I do too. And just a thing for, like, incompetency overall with this Cavs team. Oh my god, they did draft Oak. Just a few years before that, like during that such an incompetency, George Karl was coach of the Cavs at the time, just to give context of, like, what's going on.
I cannot imagine George Karl and World Be Free getting along.
I don't either, and the fact that the Cavs front office really wasn't doing World Be Free any favors either, where they drafted Charles Oakley, 9th overall, and then traded him to Chicago for Keith Lee, the 11th pick in the draft, when Karl Malone was on the table still. I mean, Karl Malone, the person, is an absolutely horrendous human being, and a monster, if you will. But as a basketball player, very, very good, arguably one of the greatest power forwards of all time. It's just top five. That's actually a tough position to really engage who is and isn't good. Tim Duncan's the best, though, so let's just be frank here. But that is just, like, not doing such a dynamic score like B-Free favors. But the fact that B-Free was such a personality and George Karl has zero patience, even then at that age, like, they talk about in this chapter, like, George Karl won them a playoff series and he wanted to be paid like a coach like that. And the Cavs coaching staff more or less said, like, oh, you're not a championship winning coach and we're not going to pay you like you're a high quality coach. It's like a Phil Jackson kind of situation in Chicago where he wanted them, Phil Jackson wanted, like, the money of, like, a top coach, but they weren't going to pay him like that. But that's a story for another day. But George Karl was still ornery back even when he was coaching the Cavs, and the Cavs front office at the time was, at least Wayne, I think this might have been the first year Wayne Embry was GM of the Cavs. This was a whiff on their part for sure.
Yeah, I the World Be Free stuff is all in all just a really weird era. I'm glad they had some kind of hero, and I think for people that were hardcore fans, and I think it's kind of cool that they at least had a personality to kind of go for in that way.
Kind of passed the torch. And Wayne Embry came the following year in 86 when...
We will get to Wayne Embry because there are some weird Wayne Embry things in this chapter that are not him, definitely, that are just weird.
Oh, just an interesting guy, but, like, God, that 86 class was very, very good for the Cavs. Like, I can't wait to talk about it. And I think it's time for us to jump ship and just start talking about the 86 Cavs. What do you think?
Yeah, let's take a break. We'll come back and do that, and we'll be back to talk about the 86 draft right after this. Evan, 86 draft can't be the number one most impactful Cavs draft because it wasn't LeBron. LeBron draft was just forever the most impactful draft the Cavs will ever have.
I don't know. This one's up here.
It's either two or three, and there's no other.
You got three franchise cornerstones at 1-8. Oh my God, the Colin Sexton pick in 25, which was the first pick of the second round, in Mark Price. Like, you're doing pretty good for yourself.
Yeah, I think it's just none of them ended up being LeBron, and LeBron would do a title, all that stuff. I think it's number two. Thinking about it just a little bit more here, I think it's two behind the 2003 class, just because LeBron is singular.
Poor Johnny Newman, though. He was the other pick in this 86 draft class. He lasted a year with Cleveland before he actually carved out a pretty good role with the Knicks, so all things worked out. But no, this LeBron won a title, so that obviously cements him, and he is the legacy of this franchise. But you and I have both agreed that the Cavs. Oh, never mind. They couldn't have gotten Dennis Rodman. Imagine they got Dennis Rodman in this draft, too. It was the 27th pick. And then Nate McMillan was actually 30th, which would have been crazy as well. But I'm losing my train of thought here. No, the LeBron pick, obviously, because, like, LeBron is the foundation and legacy and everything of this team. Like, they're going to name the court after him. They're going to name part of the arena after him. They're probably going to have a section in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse that is just a museum of LeBron's achievements and accolades as both a Cavalier and a player. And he will, of course, have a statue, multiple statues outside of the arena. But this draft class is really freaking good, and I think we might be talking about it in a different regard. If they were able to win a championship, but they ran into Michael Jordan in the Bulls, and they just kind of became the whipping boys for the Bulls at that point. And, like, two All-Stars in the draft, and then Ron Harper, who was a defensive stud even after his knees kind of gave out on him, and then Johnny Newman, who had a fine career after his time at Richmond and then leaving the Cavaliers. But, like, no, this is a really good group. And, like, I've been watching some Brad Daugherty film lately. Like, he's a lot of fun to watch as a player.
The whole thing about this, where because of the publishing schedule of the Academic Journal, the fact that Terry Pluto is able to get all this on the record stuff,
I'd love to have that
ahead of time, is outright insane. From Thaxter Trafton, which is also a great name. Like, the Cavs now are, like, the most buttoned-up organization you can find.
Well, not naming names, but some reporters do have connections with the new organization to have an idea of what they are and aren't doing with the draft. But to outright know who the picks are and to be able to run a story like that. Well, and to
get
that,
an on-the-record, like, interview to meet your deadline.
Yeah, no, that's remarkable.
I just don't know if they're doing that, if any team is doing that for anybody.
Well, the Cavs sure aren't. They aren't going to do you any favors, but, if you're listening, sorry, it's just the truth.
It's your prerogative, I get it.
It's, yeah, but that is really just cool and crazy. You know, like, there's a lot of stories in this where, like, Terry just kind of, like, things really fall in his favor more often than not when it comes to some certain situations in this, which is, it's just cool because it's, like, huge Cavs coverage, and, like, this is a breaking story on the thought process and building of this draft class, and, like, just, you know, it really shows that Wayne Embry has an eye for talent, especially with later picks like Mark Price. So, credit where credit's due. He was a very good GM. Not David. See, this is tough. Like, you have to look at it in eras. Like, Wayne Embry in this, like, 86 class and, like, the Cavs, what they became at this point, especially after they get Larry Nance, are, like, so, so good. But you have David Griffin and LeBron James. If you fast forward, like, especially 2016, when Taylor fit this roster to play alongside and compliment LeBron beautifully. But, like, I'm going to sound like Terry here, but this Cavs team really played the fundamentals and, like, we're just loaded in every position, but played everything right on both ends of the court. And it's just a lot of, like, different perspectives and situations with this team.
Could you imagine, I didn't even consider this what if, but could you imagine if they'd taken Len Bias?
Well, Bill Simmons would be a lot more obnoxious, I could tell you that much, because he'd be talking about Brad Daugherty
for, like, 7 years.
But I understand. Well, here's how you look at it, though, because, I mean, Michael Jordan went third overall, and they went Hakeem, and they went Sam Bowie, but it's still in this era where the Cavs were really different in this regard, too, where, like, they were a three-point-heavy team with, like, Mark Price and Craig Elo and everybody else, but and even Steve Kerr, too, but you always get you win with the big man, and, like, that was the mentality for the longest time in the NBA, and that narrative has really just changed, and maybe in the mid-2000s or so, I'd want to say, restart building around, like, all-around forwards, or, like, especially power, like, point forwards, like LeBron, if you want to, or, like, you more so become a jump shooting team. But like, no, Len Bias makes sense though, because he was a very, very good player coming out of Maryland. It's just unfortunate what happened, and don't do coke, kids. That's all I can say.
Yeah, don't do that.
That was a good pause. Like, yeah, no, don't do that. Like,
emphasis. One of the things that I think is craziest just about this draft, and I don't know if I'm skipping into the next chapter. I don't think I am, but the fact that like Wayne Embry is about to come in here and he's like still working for the Pacers.
Yeah, no, he's
like, and there's like all these negotiations, like the Pacers want to trade up and get the pick and everything like that.
It kind of feels like he sabotaged the Pacers, to be honest.
Yeah, even though there's like very, they're like kind of positing that they didn't do that.
Yeah, you can posture it and say like, oh yeah, we didn't, that wasn't our intention, but like, I don't care. It definitely felt like Wayne Embry was like negotiating with like 2 feet out the door, where he's just like, no, let me set myself up. Pretty going forward in my new job, and then maybe just kind of help the other team along the way out the door. I mean, it's like if Griff was able to pull the trigger on a PG-13 or Eric Bledsoe trade, and how fun that Cavs team would have been for the last LeBron year. But c'est la vie, I don't know. It would have been fun. It would have been nice, but it's also a different situation entirely as well.
Just the way that works out, I just can't imagine that would have been good now, because it just seems very like unsavory. Fined. And like, there's just so many conflicts of interest. That's a thing in all of this that I just can't imagine. Like, this wouldn't have been like out there and like uncomfortable, and like it had to be uncomfortable then. But it's just like, I can't imagine teams would like allow that to be happening now.
No, I don't either. And no, Wayne Embry he did a good job setting up the Cavs long term for success. Like, just really savvy picks. Like the following year, he picked. Sorry, I had a moment. They select Kevin Johnson with the 7th overall pick, who they flip to Phoenix the following year, and that's where they get Larry Nance and Mike Sanders, and Larry Nance being like the big piece there, mostly because Mark Price is just really ascended into such a good player. Like, Kevin Johnson was a smart pick at the time, but I'm speaking like I know. Sorry, the moment I had was the following year in 87. Guess who was picked before Kennard Johnson at 40th overall in that draft, without Googling?
I can't.
It Winston Garland. That's why I had like a moment I got wide-eyed, because I thought the Cavs drafted Winston Garland. I'm like, there's no way that can't be the case. But no, he was drafted by the Bucks one pick before. Sorry.
When you think about this draft in 86, considering how bad everything was before this, and then
this is a palate cleanser.
It kind of comes back, and kind of this is like the turning point, really. What do you kind of make sure? What do you think is the solve of the draft? Like, it is the fixing point for them and the foundation for a really, really great run, the best in franchise history up until that time. Mm-hmm. There's no other like way I can really spin it as like anything other than like that important for the Cavs.
Oh no, this is a huge palate cleanser just from the stink that was Ted Stepien, especially because Ted Stepien mortgaged the future. The Cavs were able to build for the future, especially in the fact that they got 2 all-stars out of this draft in Brad Doherty and Mark Price, and they got, again, a very, very, very good complimentary defensive-minded prospect out of Miami of Ohio, of all places. And I don't know if Miami, Ohio was a basketball powerhouse back in the 80s, but a smaller school, considering that he's sandwiched between a player named Ron Tarpley, who was picked from Michigan, and then you have Brad Sellers, who is from Ohio State. And then you have guys like from Duke and Georgia Tech and LSU, like actual like notable programs. Like, Wayne Embry's got an eye for talent here too, like, I think, because he's kind of running. He's been general manager since 86. I think he was running the Cavs at this point. So just really smart drafting. It's just a good palate cleanser to just build towards the future, where you get 3 cornerstone pieces, again, at 1-8, which is a Colin Sexton spot, so maybe Colin Sexton could have some potential with the 8th overall pick, who knows. And then Mark Price at 25, which is a second-round pick, which, granted, is a more of a late first because it's the first pick of the second round, but whatever. Just really good drafting, and it's a really good way to set yourself up long-term for success.
Yeah, and he also was like linked to Indiana, was one of the things there. And that was one of the things that...
This is the year before they drafted Reggie, too.
Yeah, so this could have been like really setting up Indiana in a really interesting way, and the Cavs kind of steal their thunder a little bit. And Price and Reggie would have been like a great combo.
Oh my goodness,
it in that era,
so good. That would have been a lot of fun. I think they really would have taken the Knicks to task then. As a New Yorker, Chris, I feel like that's hard for me to say to you, but
I have family that's from New York.
I consider you an honorary New Yorker.
Because I picked the Liberty.
You picked the Liberty, and I feel like if somebody, you're crossing the street and somebody snuck into the crosswalk, you would say, I'm walking here. And you'd slap the hood and say, come on. But that was more of a New York accent.
I do love New York City.
And then when you're at the restaurant with your wife, it's your anniversary, you ask for the gabagool. I feel like that's what you do too. We're losing focus here, but I think
86 draft.
Yeah, 86 draft was very good.
Is it your number one or number two?
Two
in all time. Okay,
because LeBron is so much bigger. He's arguably the greatest player of all time. Like, you have three very good players in this draft, but none of them are the greatest player of all time.
Yeah. Okay, let's do one more break here. Before we do that, I want to just tell you guys about Axios. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo. I'm going to redo that. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insights into trends shaping the world. Get that wherever you get podcasts. Also, check out the Axios Sports newsletter from Kendall Baker. It's really, really good, and I highly, highly recommend that as well. We're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about the next chapter in Vintage Cavs right after this. All right, Evan, last thing here. Vintage Cavs.
I disagree with this title. It should have been Hot Rod or the Big Engine.
Yeah, failure, Terry Pluto.
Could have hired me to edit for some
This
puns.
Is my favorite chapter to date.
Yeah, no, I like Hot Rod Williams as a player, just looking at him. But, like, no, this was just a fun chapter to learn about, like, his story and just how meaningful he was for the Cavs and... I think more so than World Be Free, I think Hot Rod makes a better case of getting his jersey retired with the Cavs. Like, Deli shouldn't be wearing 18, in my opinion.
What is your favorite anecdote from this chapter?
When he just talks about how, like, at the beginning, like, at the very beginning of the chapter, honestly, where he talks about how he had signed a free agent offer sheet for the Miami Heat and it was matched by the Cavs, and like it was for 7 years, $26.5 million. It just paid $4 million, which is more money than what Michael Jordan was making at the time. Like, I found that was fascinating. And I thought it was just a cool piece where you learn about, like, Hot Rod's life in Louisiana and what he liked to do in his spare time and, like, how he was just kind of a little bit more of a rural guy where, like, he used the term mudroom, which seemed foreign to Terry, but I'm like, no, that makes sense to me. And I've grown up in a lot of rural towns and lived in a lot of rural towns. Like, we have a mudroom at my parents' house. And like,
mudroom is a classic, like, I learned that. I grew up in, like, a more rurally suburb, I guess.
Yeah, but, we both did.
Mudroom's like a big classic, like, HGTV asking for when they're, like, doing flip or flop or, like, what's the show? List Love It or List It. It's like a big common ask on that show.
Yeah, and just like Hot Rod's a good dude, like just a good guy, and like just the way Terry structured and framed this chapter like really did paint Hot Rod in a positive life. And if I were to learn something negative about him, it would crush me. It'd be like meeting one of your heroes and learning they're an actual monster. But no, Hot Rod was just a good guy, and like just. I don't want to say it's like LeBron, but he knew where he came from in that regard. And, like, he definitely gave back to his community to make sure everyone who helped him get to where he was taken care of.
The thing about all this that I think is really interesting with him is that he just seems like a guy that really just kind of took things as they came.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't do anything necessarily himself. Like, kind of, like, seek himself out. To do this, just kind of like went with where it went, and obviously ends up at Tulane because the coaches bit like basically could kind of fudge his grades a little bit and kind of get him into the system is kind of the implication.
Derek Rose,
and then he gets caught up in this point shaving scandal, and it basically just seems like everyone just kind of bagged him, even though he really
didn't. Oh, it tanked his draft stock.
Yeah, like he's probably a much higher draft pick than he was. Probably maybe not a Cav if this doesn't happen, but it basically just seems like he didn't have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. And then got, like, thrown into the issue of what was going on just because these guys testified against him, and then the press just kind of seemed to go along with it.
Yeah, it's just
just troubling.
No, they viewed him as a nuclear player, which was disappointing for sure. Oh, my bad. They viewed him as just like a nuclear asset coming out of college. Like, I mean, point shaving is a serious thing, but at the same time, well, I mean, he took 8,500 from Gary Kranz for influencing point spreads in three different games, but I get it as well. Like, if you're a poor kid from a poor community and, like, you're given this kind of money, like, you'd be stupid.
He was sending the money back.
Yeah, you're sending the money back. It's not even like he's pocketing it and, like, buying a bunch of luxurious things. Like, he's giving it right back. And, like, yeah, Tulane did some shady things because Tulane really isn't, like, a prestigious or powerhouse program. And, like, he was a very good prospect coming out of high school with a lot of potential. But, like, every other team's loss was the Cavs game in that regard, because he put in 9 good years the Cavaliers and, again, has made a case that he could have his jersey retired by the Cavs. Like, he's up there in terms of just being like a career, like a block leader in the NBA overall. Like, he was a defensive powerhouse. And I would, we talked about this when we did the, you know, ill-fated live stream game, may it rest in peace, wherever it is. Hot Rod would be so much fun.
What a lifetime ago, huh?
I was so mad when that got, like, was lost. But, Hot Rod would have been a lot of fun in today's NBA. Like, I think he would have been another fun, like, he'd be a fun plug-and-play player for a lot of teams in today's NBA.
One of the other things about this that I think is quite crazy is that he's the first client of Mark Bartelstein, who is now one of the most powerful agents in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Is Larry Nance Jr.'s agent. And the quote here at the end of the chapter from Bartelstein is this: "I can't begin to explain the impact Hot Rod had on my career. We represent Steve Kerr because of Hot Rod. We represent Larry Nance Jr. because of Hot Rod. He changed my life and the lives of many others. He just seems like everything you could, like, everyone in this has nothing bad to say about him. He just actually just seems like a genuinely just, like, good human being."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's, like, uncommon in the NBA, but for it to exude in this way, I find to just, like, be incredibly unique. Like, I can't think of anyone that I've ever interacted with or they've talked about a guy in this particular way. Maybe it's the era, maybe it's his very, very unique upbringing, like, which, like, again, like, we didn't even mention this. Dad leaves and his mother, and he ends up just basically being adopted by his neighbor who wasn't, like,
blind,
not his blood relative.
Yeah, and blind, but, like, I was gonna go with blind, but yeah, so it's not even his blood relative, just his neighbor just adopted him and gave him a home.
And it is just, like, a crazy life origin story.
Well, that, and he got the nickname Hot Rod. For those listening, his name is John Williams, which, you know, the composer of Star Wars is also, you know, a good name to hang your hat on as well. But he got the nickname Hot Rod for making car noises and scooting backwards across the floor. Like, just an interesting, like, he had a very interesting life. And, I mean, it's a sad story, but he was able to rise past his circumstances and, again, never forgot where he came from. And, like you said, a good person, like, made sure that the people who helped make a difference and believed in him, he took good care of them every step of the way, like Bartelstein included. Like, Bartelstein probably wouldn't be a power agent if he wasn't able to get a big marquee client like Hot Rod. And because, again, Hot Rod was making more money than Michael Jordan at one point in his career, which is really crazy to think, one, how little athletes make compared to then. I mean, inflation, you can compare numbers and whatnot, but just, it's testament to how good an agent Bartelstein is and how good a player Hot Rod is as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All-time interesting Cav, I think they should do some more for him. To kind of honor him in some way, I think they should. I think it's a no-brainer. I think I'm more interested in honoring him than World Be Free. Slight to World Be.
No, slight to World Be. I think
Hot Rod's legacy is more valuable.
Yeah, I think Hot Rod is such a big difference-making player for the Cavs. Like, I really do think they need to approach the conversation of, like, maybe we need to retire 18 for him. Like, you can start saying, like, okay, the Cavs aren't really that big a franchise. They aren't, like, the Celtics or the Lakers. Why are they retiring so many jerseys? But, like, Hot Rod was, like, an integral piece to what the Cavs were trying to accomplish, and they were successful in.
Yeah. Salute to the original three big lineup from the late 80s, early 90s.
For real, though. This Cavs team was so ahead of its time. And next week we're gonna again talk about like my greatest shame and not knowing Gordon Gunn was blind. So that's, it's a whole chapter dedicated to that.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. But that's gonna be it for today's show. Again, thanks to everyone for listening, reading along with us. Check out everything we have going on if you're at the store this week. The whole series will be back next week with another intro into that series and continuing to poke around the bubble a little bit. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs for Friday. We're into August now, which is crazy.
I know.
And Evan, why don't you send everyone out here with your favorite words?
Wear a mask. Yeah, and go Cavs, but wear a mask.